Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome back to Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, the podcast where two dudes, that is us, watch cartoons. My name is Evan.
And my name is Alex, and we're back today with regular scheduled programming. We are ending the Pixar March Madness. Just to recap, if you wanted to skip all of that, Monsters, Inc. ended up winning over Toy Story in the end. An underdog story through and through. Thanks for being with us. We got a great episode with you today. An even better guest. We have Chaz Cardigan. Now, Chaz here has a brand new album on Spotify, which is called A Year in Glassland. We're so excited to have you today. You came, you brought this movie to us, which we always love when someone brings something to us and we get to talk about. But Chaz, say hello to the audience, you know, introduce yourself, tell them a little about yourself, and thanks for being here. We're happy to have you.
Oh my gosh, guys, I'm ecstatic for this. I'm a lifelong fan. That is unfortunate. It's actually practically impossible. Life of the pod, yes. No, I'm a fan. I love movies more than anything in the world. I love animated movies. I'm a musician first and foremost, but you know, throughout my life growing up in the Midwest, movies were the thing. Disney movies particularly. The Don Bluth movies, got into film school, couldn't afford it. Tale as Old as Time, became a musician instead. And have spent the last 10 years living with my regret, you know, by like trying to make something that measures up to the power of cinema.
No. You are in the right place for 10 years of regret. Welcome to the podcast. Hey.
It's been a good walk. I'm glad you guys like the record. I'm proud of it. These days, I'm actually writing more stuff for like musicals and TV shows and things like that. So I get to have my foot in both worlds now, and I get to reference musical movie soundtracks on the daily. So I appreciate that in my life now. Mm.
That's great. Big musical fan here in my household. Me and Nikki, we love musicals, so that's fun. Love to hear that. Yeah, so today, Chaz brought to us a very interesting movie, Black Cauldron. Now, before we get into anything, Evan's going to go over some facts about the movie. Chaz, I have to know, I ask everyone this, what made you pick this movie? What brought you here and said, this is the movie I got to talk about?
Look, if you are a podcast focusing on animation and you're animation nerds, you gotta have this episode. Just fundamentally, this is a piece of the canon that has to be talked about, whether you like it or not. And I was honestly amazed that you guys hadn't covered this. And there's just so much to the story of this movie that I think is interesting, that I think like bogs down people's actual perception of the film sometimes. Mm-hmm. They get lost, and I think here's the history of it, which is interesting. Don't get me wrong. And we should talk about it.
We're going to. We got, so let me kind of start with my experience here. I had done a podcast where we talked about like Disney through the eras. Mm-hmm. And so I like very briefly touched on Black Cauldron. This was maybe like a year ago. First time I'd ever seen it though. Had not seen it since it came out in, I want to say 1985 is when it came out. Had not seen it my whole life. And I was intrigued by it, but I was also very confused. And so then Chaz comes to us and says, I want to watch Black Cauldron. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I'm excited to see why we're going to watch this and go back. And man, so I watched it. And then I did, you know, my little internet search, like, oh, any fun facts I can do for the podcast or whatnot.
They're pretty fun.
And I learned some crazy things about this movie. So I am excited to talk about it. And I've done like a 180 in the last 24 hours, where before I was like, what are we going to talk about with this movie? And now I'm like, oh my God, we have too much to cover with this movie.
Definitely. The short answer to what you actually asked me, though, was I loved this movie as a kid. And that's it. For whatever reason, I was one of the three kids in this country that had this on VHS.
You know what? In my internet search, though, I will say there's like articles, there's YouTube videos that are kind of dogging this movie, but all the comments, every single one of the comments is like, man, love this movie as a kid. Obsessed with this movie. We broke the VHS in my house. And so that speaks to something that, like, you know, fans are what move the meter, in my opinion, more than anyone. So
for sure,
I'm excited to get into it. There's some weird. There's some wonky. There's a lot of history here. So there's a lot. But Evan, you know, kind of give us a little bit of the details here with The Black Cauldron, 1985.
Feels really old. Yeah, old predates me by 7 years, but this is in the era of Disney that I learned today was before their big 90s resurgence, but shortly after Walt Disney's death. You can imagine maybe the Steve Jobs passing of their time. So it was a time when Disney's sort of trying to find itself again, trying to find its footing. But it released July 24th, 1985. Runtime comes out to, I don't know if this is correct, 80 minutes? I thought it was closer to an hour 20, but it's right, wait, it's I guess right that would be...
No, 80 minutes is right there. Yeah. You're close. Yeah,
it's under the math is not my strong suit, but it comes under the 90-minute mark, which is beautiful. Love that. Made on a budget of $44 million, although at the time it was said to be about 24, but retrospectively, some of the producers said it cost about $44 million to make, and made a box office gross of $21.3 million. So flopped, you know, box office wise, but. And is often referred to as the movie that almost killed Disney.
This is where my research starts. I look this up and I go, the movie that almost killed Disney? What the hell? What am I working with here? So, Evan, now a common theme, we've been saying this for the past really like 5, 6, 7 episodes, runtime. We're like, you know what? We want something shorter. I'm going to push back on myself here. And say this movie could have benefited from another 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think that goes to the sort of the production of the movie. But such as you, this was sort of your worn out VHS as a kid. Mine personally was Tarzan. I don't know. Alex, what was yours?
Oh, mine was The Lion King. I had that sucker on.
Great choices all around. With it being a movie from your childhood, when did you sort of revisit it as an adult? And what were your thoughts? How does it hold up against your childhood nostalgia?
Sure. Okay. So I have three, I think, distinct chapters with this movie. One is as a toddler watching the thing and just thinking it's cool. And I'm not watching critically. How can you? I thought the Horn King was cool. I thought the blah, blah, blah. And then I kind of forget about it. And it's a VHS that's just in my basement with all my other Disney, you know, jewel boxes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then clamshells, that's what they were called. And then I remember when I got into my emo phase in middle school. A buddy of mine and I, who hit it at the exact same time, probably like age 12, were like, both of us were like, nobody talks about The Black Cauldron. And both of us just start watching it all the time as like a weird comfort movie when we would go to either of our houses after school in the afternoon. Yeah. We just have it on and be like, this is so much cooler than anything else anybody's watching. This is awesome. Man, if we smoked weed, we would have been so cool back then. Yeah. But we just, and then I forget it again. And then... You know, I'm a Disney nerd, and I love the history of the animation studio, and I just didn't come back to it all through my adult years for whatever reason until I came up with the idea to do this. And so revisiting it was, here's the thing. I actually kind of want to talk about this as much as possible without all of the studio interference, but the problem is you can't. It's so entwined. To Alex's point, like, this does need another 10 or 15 minutes. Coincidentally, it's exactly what was cut out of the movie by Jeffrey Katzenberg. But the problem is, okay, I'm an adult living in Los Angeles, and to be cynical about it, I'm like, it's not special that this had so much studio interference. Actually, every movie has that many fingerprints on it.
And it felt really like a big deal when we were younger. Like,
of course.
What?
Yeah, how dare they? Well, that's why they buried it, because they didn't want anybody to know that it was actually really cool, and they made it less cool. And it's like, no, I think it's bad.
Yeah.
I think my hot take is that it's actually just not that good, but I love it I think there's a lot to it that is beautiful. I think there's a lot of beauty here to talk about, but on its own and as just a piece of output, yeah, I get it. I get it.
So that I'm of two schools of thought too, because we do a podcast about animation. Sometimes that involves kids' cartoons, younger properties. So we don't want to sit here and be like, well, it didn't make sense, this, that, whatever, because sometimes that is cartoons. That's just how it is. We like to have levity. But we are going to sit here and be critical of the things that need to be critical. There were so many points in this movie, and the reason I say it needs 10 more minutes, that I just did not understand what on earth was going on.
So, hold on. Not to presume anything, but I just have to get this out of my system. Yep. Can I give you all like a really condensed history of this thing?
Please.
We've been beating around the bush long enough.
Let's do it. Yeah, talking to these issues. Let's do it.
And I think I have some context that might help with some of this too. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna try to speed through this. But Disney has these 9 famous animators who worked on everything from Snow White onward. They're called the 9 Old Men. They were the founding animators, right? Mm-hmm. Always there. 2 of the 9 Old Men convinced the studio to get the rights to this children's high fantasy series called The Chronicles of Prydain.
Love.
They thought the books were rich and that the film could be as good as Snow White.
Editor's note, there's 30 books.
Yes.
Editor's note, there are 30 books. I think that's an important side note here. Please continue, Chaz.
No, valid. And Disney got the rights to the first 5 in 1971. So for context, the 70s are really weird for Disney. Kids are not seeing their movies that much because there are blockbusters now. You have Jaws. You have Star Wars. Mm. There's not the Towering Inferno. There's not the same reason to see movies that Disney made. The animated ones are doing okay. But the new animation president wanted to make the movies more adult, try to age up their audience, and he's also Walt Disney's son-in-law.
There's always a little bit of nepotism.
it all comes back. Okay.
Right. So the live action movies are aging up and they're bombing. Bedknobs and Broomsticks, The Black Hole, bomb. Yep. So the 9 Old Men have been lead on every project since Snow White. They're aging out and they're apprenticing a younger generation of animators like Don Bluth and Tim Burton. And this is the only Disney movie that Tim Burton works on, the only feature he works on. The animation team are excited about this for years. The young kids are like, this is going to bring us back. This is going to really do something. One of the 9 Old Men has these amazing pastel concept sketches from 76. And the president, Disney's son-in-law, just thinks the younger animators can't do it. He just thinks they can't cut it yet. So they actually keep putting out other movies instead of this to train them, like Pete's Dragon, Mickey's Christmas Carol, Fox and the Hound. Those are all stepping stones for Black Cauldron. So... Mm-hmm. Finally get into production in 1980. They throw out Tim Burton's character designs. He leaves the studio not long after this. Yeah. They get one of the 9 Old Men to do the characters instead. They're editing the story, trying to cut down characters from the books. Producers are coming in and out. It's a mess. The original lead animators on this are Musker and Clemens, who go on to do Great Mouse Detective and all of the 90s Renaissance movies that we grew up with. So they finally make this thing. And in 84, the studio does a test screening at the Burbank lot, and... children are disturbed. Children are crying. Children are leaving. It's too dark. The children are leaving.
I'm so sorry.
They're leaving.
Imagine a theater of children. They're like, I need to leave. This is like terrible.
And these are
that's like
kids.
Such an adult thing to be like, I need to get out of here.
It's awesome. And these are the kids of Disney animators, right? It's amazing. So the cauldron.
That's like friends
sequence,
and family, isn't it?
It was way more grisly. So the new studio chairman, Jeffrey Katzenberg, is freaked out. And he orders the team to cut it by 10 minutes. And animated films are not cut like that. They're edited at storyboard before they make it this far. So the producer said no, and Katzenberg said, I'll do it myself. And edited the movie himself.
Yeah, and said, I'll do it myself.
I'm just going to do it. And Michael, the new CEO, Michael Eisner, tells him that's a no-no. And Katzenberg still demands that they push the release from Christmas 84 to July 85 so they can rework the film. They cut it by 12 minutes, mostly character interactions and exposition. Here's the context, though, that I think is missing in that. In 1984, when they did that test screening, Fox and the Hound was their last animated movie, which did okay. Mm-hmm. But since then, they had a string of live-action bombs that were all edgy and dark. So since Fox and the Hound, it was... Tell you these names. Tell me if you know any of these. Condor Man, Night Crossing, Tex, Something Wicked This Way Comes, Never Cry Wolf. And they're about to...
My favorite movies. No.
They're about to bomb again with Return to Oz. And their only success in this 4 years, the only movie that makes its budget back is Tron, which is a critical flop.
Okay.
So Katzenberg is losing shit because they cannot afford another bomb. And the animation is their bread and butter. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's all the context. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. It's important to the movie.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It's Succession-esque. Like the corporate maneuvering around these different generations of animators. It's a who's who of like animation legends. Jeffrey Katzenberg, who went off to head DreamWorks. I think he's still the head, I believe. Yeah. Don Bluth did Anastasia, I think.
Yeah, 100% did.
All Dogs Go to Heaven, Land Before Time.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And then obviously Tim Burton. But I have a quote, Tim Burton leaving about his time working on the movie.
What's the quote?
All he said was, "I had to get the hell out of there." That's all the quote said.
He didn't work for Disney again. Keep in mind, Tim Burton
never worked for Disney again.
Well, until Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay. Ooh, yeah, you gotta go for Alice in Wonderland.
But that's it. He's gone for 20 years after this. He had 30? I can't do math right now.
Yeah, 30 now. It feels... Anytime the 80s, I'm like, oh, like 20 years ago. No, it's 40 years ago from the 80s now.
Oof. How old are we?
Yeah. Fuck. okay. Wow. So I think that is very important for the movie. And honestly, when doing my research, I think one of the biggest things is, like I said, there's 30 books. They got the rights to 5 of them. They tried to condense all 5 of these books into one movie is also something that I think is really important, because they say you don't need to know anything about this mythical land we're in. You're just here along here for the ride. Get used to it. So just right at the beginning, this is a good transition into sort of the plot, is we have the main character, Taran. Taran is his name. And he lives with Dalben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's Dalben?
I had to look at Wikipedia to understand this relationship.
Who's Dalben? Who is Dalben? Someone tell me who Dalben is, please.
He's the head pig keeper. What else do you need to know?
Why is Taran living with the head pig keeper?
Wait, even better. Actually, Dalben is like an enchanter, is what Wikipedia told me, and that's not in the movie at all.
Yeah.
He does know a spell. He has like an incantation that the pig...
He has one.
He has one spell that requires a pig. I think a certain pig, if I'm being
Henlin,
honest.
Yes.
Henlin. But so, all right, it's Dalben, not father, not grandfather, just Dalben. And
they're a master apprentice. I accept that, I guess.
Yeah. I guess.
Maybe.
I was like, where's Taran's family here? And the other thing that made me realize we're never going to get like an introduction to this world is several times they'll be like, just past the Forbidden Forest at the cabin. That's where you need to go. Huh? I didn't even know there was a Forbidden Forest a second ago. It was, man. But once you get past that and you're like along for the ride, it is quite the roller coaster. I'll give you that.
Totally. Because this film is so chopped to shit.
It's so choppy.
I'm fascinated by what's left in and what isn't. Because totally to your point, here's the thing about like the who is Dalben, the Forbidden Forest of it all. I actually don't mind personally not having the lore dump on those. If we got no lore dumps at all, because the lore that we do get this thing opens. I forgot this. This film opens with like a minute and a half long narration about how the Black Cauldron is the spirit of a dead, like God King.
Never comes up again.
That is within his reign of terror. The gods had to imprison him in a cauldron.
Never comes up again.
It's pretty cool.
Never.
It's cool. Yeah.
It's
never.
Cool. It's interesting.
It is cool.
But to your point, is it important to what we need to know at all? No.
No,
but it's cool as hell.
No.
It's the rule
then, like,
of cool.
How it's used to make the undead army is like, well, what's that all about? What is Ailanwë the princess of? How did the is the Horned King the king of?
Yep.
Well, okay. So actually, to get into the royal politics of it all, the princess at one point does say, oh, the king, and there's a sword in the king's hand. Oh, the king that used to rule here must have been overtaken or something along those lines. We don't know when, who the king was, what he was the king of. Is she the princess of that king? No clue. Never addressed. We do not know if she's from a totally different kingdom, this was her kingdom and the Horned King took over.
Yes.
I don't know, but... Like I said, once you start ignoring these things, you can put on some blinders and you're like, man, I do love that Horned King, though. You're like, I don't care what he's doing. I love it.
John Hurt is doing some magic in this movie.
Yeah. Here's my pushback, Alex. Who cares? I'm along for the ride.
Okay. Maybe I was too critical, but I'm not going to lie. I'm sitting there and several times I had to ask myself, how did we get here? What was the preceding step to, like?
Go ahead, Evan.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, quick point of clarification. I don't want to be the well actually guy, Alex, but
please.
The series Chronicles of Prydain is actually 5 novels. They adapted the first 2 for this movie.
Excuse me, I was wrong.
I think what you're referring to is something that I've also read, is that there are like 30 plus characters in this series, and so they had, and that's something, there probably are just as many in this movie, okay. But they had to sort of condense down a lot. But I'm also fresh to this movie. I liked the lore dump. And a lot of the complaints about the movie are like, it's choppy. It lacks a setup and all this and that. And like, you don't know what's happening for what reason. And I think a lot of that you could kind of chalk up to, it's like an 80s movie, with high fantasy movie. And just like,
yeah,
it's like, you know, trust the suspension of disbelief a little bit. I think there should be a happy medium somewhere between, like, yes, there should be sufficient setup, but just like, shut off that critical piece of your brain and just like, this, come along for the ride.
This is the last critical. Oh, I have 2 last criticals pieces of, and then we can move on from it.
Get them out.
One point, they pick up the pig and they fly him to the Horned King's castle, and then no cut, no anything. Taren's just in the castle trying to find the pig. Not even a literal door open. Oh, I found the castle. He just is in the castle.
Hey, he does.
Storytelling efficiency.
You see him climbing the wall.
This one's my funniest complaint. At one point, when the Horde King starts getting power, he kills his own men to turn them into zombies, but he's got like 90 prisoners throughout this castle strewn about. The princess, the bard. He doesn't kill any of the good guys, but he'll kill his own men.
They knew what they signed up for. He doesn't really want to pay them anymore, but these people had families they need to go back to. He doesn't actually want to hurt prisoners. He actually just wants to detain them until it's politically relevant to let them go.
Yeah. They have diplomatic value for his negotiations.
Yeah, you know, they leverage. No,
he's like, I can't be a king if the other kingdoms don't recognize me. Okay, yeah, I'm wrong. Yeah, he's like, I got a princess. I can't just kill her.
I do think, yeah, the things I'm critical about with this are all things like, you know, I'm an adult now and I'm watching film differently. I didn't care about most of this as a kid. You know what I will say, as a child, I did get bored by this movie. I clocked, and I love it. I loved it. But I clocked out of it every time around the time they all first leave the palace. After the gang's all together and they've got Fluter Flim and they've got Princess Ilanwi, through the fairy segment until the witches come back, I would just like go around and do other things. I would
totally
play with toys or go do something else. And then when the witches showed up, I'm back. Because
that's what the writers did also. Because they go on this quest to search for this pig, and they're trying to find him, and it's great, and we love the pig, and we're searching for him. And then they get sucked down this whirlpool. Oh, no, and we're taken to this cave of fairies. Oh, but guess what? It's where the pig was the whole time.
And and we're chasing the pig because the pig's oracular powers may lead us to the Black Cauldron or could give away the position, which they don't even use the pig. It doesn't matter because the fairies are just like, oh, actually, the cauldron's over here. Do you want to
see the pig? Abusing the pig. I didn't even clock that. But the fairies are like, yeah, the Black Cauldron, it's right over there with those witches. Oh, my God.
Awesome.
That's so funny. Because they are, the whole movie, they're chasing the pig. We didn't talk about this, but so Delbar. No, what's his name? I messed it up already.
Delvin.
Delvin.
Respect.
Delvin has a spell, which at some point off camera he teaches to Taren. We don't see it, but Taren knows it later on. And so the spell is the pig drinks from a bowl of water and it can see the future. And I think through your eyes, you can peek over its shoulder and also see the future.
Yeah.
Right?
That seems like the vibe. It seems like it like projects a vision of a smoky little vision of the future into a bowl of water.
Here's my question.
Uh-huh.
We're in the medieval times. Mm. How'd they figure this out about this pig? How did it not become bacon before that happened?
Dalvin was keeping it a secret. That's why
he knew the whole time.
Oh.
Yeah, he's mystery. All right.
Actually, Evan brings up a really good question here. This world is really full of magic.
Yes.
And I have a bigger point to make after this, but why do we need to keep the pig magic a secret?
It's too powerful. Like, because
the Horned King might come after it, you know?
People
might
the Black Cauldron.
Use it for evil.
Right. Okay, so this is something that my partner brought up after we watched this movie. Does everyone know about the Black Cauldron, or is this a thing like just the Horned King knows about? And also, the world, again, this is the lore doesn't matter. I'm just being I'm an annoying guy on the internet.
This is what we love on the podcast.
All we are.
When they're down in the fairy cave, one of them is like, is all the burning and killing still going on up there? And someone's like, you refer to the rule of the Horned King. And I'm like, it's pretty sunny and nice up there, actually. Actually, everything seems very lovely up there, except for his castle, which is hellish.
I did not see a whole lot of burning and killing, if I'm being honest.
No, the forest was fine. I mean, the Forbidden Forest or whatever bit is like kind of creepy, but everything else seems fine. There were little, glens.
Stay out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The castle is like Maleficent Sleeping Beauty castle, and that's, by the way, just to put it out there because we're being critical right now, everything about that castle in the Horned King is awesome and looks so good. The castle, there's that scene. This is the first Disney animated movie that used CG for anything, and like at night, there's this lightning shot like looking up at the castle from under. It's like kind of a Dutch angle. It's just beautiful. It's really, really well done. Like all of that stuff is cool.
Yeah, and I think so when they got the rights in 1970, the early 70s, there was some early concept artwork that was done that sort of leaned into that dark fantasy gothic stuff that I think got watered down as it went on. But even what shows up in this movie is really, really beautiful to look at. This is one
of
like,
good.
I don't mean tonally. Yeah, tonally, I don't mean like story-wise dark, but like just like the heavy reds and like black that pervades this movie in the Forbidden Forest and in the castle is really nice to look at. Another thing I'll say is like, Alex, you know, we've been critical of this movie so far, but I think the more we talk about its flaws, and we've already gone over how it is sort of a movie made by committee, obviously, and it's chopped to bits, but the more we discuss it and I sort of get your point, Jazz, like the more we discuss its flaws and like what could have been, the more I appreciate what does come through there. It is boring, but that's what a five entry high fantasy series is like, you know, like I appreciate that comes through, and it's like it's not it's just a movies from the 80s. Like movies were a little slower paced, you know, things aren't as exciting all the time back then, and so I don't know, I'm coming out, I don't want to call myself like a huge raving fan of this movie, but I can like really appreciate it for what it is.
To the point, I think it's really well said that towards the end of the film, the animation, especially for the 80s, starts getting out of this world. Like, really cool. Like, you could tell some of it's computer generated and it looks really cool. And, like, the tones you were talking about with the contrast of, like, the bright green smoke going through the skulls and all that. There was a lot of beautiful animation towards the end where I was like, whoa. I was like, this is, I got to pay attention to what's going on with this Black Cauldron right now. And so lots of really cool. And even the Horned King, like from the jump, super cool design. The whole, I think Chaz is right. Everything in the castle was really great. It almost looked like the bard. And the reason I'm not saying his name is it's so outrageous. I'm going to missay it.
Fluter Flynn.
Flifferdoo? Fluter Flynn, excuse me.
Two F's.
Why is the two F's there?
It's Celtic. I'll push back on that one. This movie's like really Celtic. Like in a lot, just
gotcha. See, I didn't know that. See, that's interesting too to me.
Yeah, well, and that's so the source material is something interesting. And they, by the way, Disney has the rights to these books again and intends to make them as a live action thing. That's been not like a live action, like their Little Mermaid, Lion King stuff, but like they've talked about doing like a more adult, like Hulu focused, like live action Chronicles of Prydain thing, which could be interesting. I haven't read the books,
I'll be
awesome.
There.
My question is,
I'm watching.
Did this need to be made? We can respect it, we can love it, but the question is, why was this optioned, and did this need to be a movie? Did this need to be an animated movie by the Walt Disney Company?
You've brought up an interesting conversation we had a few weeks back about live action in general. Like, so this is not your point exactly, but like, did this need to be made? And I think we came to the conclusion, Hollywood don't give a damn about need.
True, of course,
so,
of course.
While I agree with you, I think, and I hate being, I sound like a stern parent, like, well, I'm glad Disney learned their lesson and took their lumps, because look at what it did sort of produce after that. Like, while this did not work, this is still beloved. Like, there are a lot of people that love this movie. Like, we teased that we were doing it at the end of Pixar March Madness, and I had a lot of people that were like, oh, I'm so excited for Black Cauldron, and I was like, wow, I was worried not enough people would know it. I was worried people would have to go watch it, and not that that's a bad thing, but so many people already knew it going in, and so I think the combo of the fan base and like what they learned from it, you know, sometimes you gotta fall down to learn something.
Yeah, I like that, Reed. Yeah. I'll
Chaz,
take it.
I'd be interested to hear what your answer to that question is.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh. I mean, okay. Look, here's where I'm at. I think that Disney, and this is part of a longer arc for them, where they are just really desperate to make a boy movie, and they couldn't figure it out. This is their first animated movie that had no songs in it. And part of that was they really thought, we've got to get the boy audience. The boys are all watching Star Wars now. The boys are all watching Star Trek on TV. The boys are all going to these other things. We've got to lock that. And that plagues them for a really long time. And I think they get it figured out later. And like, it's the same thing that sinks Atlantis later. Is that they are like, we need something. We need a boy franchise and a girl franchise. And now they've solved that problem by just acquiring Star Wars and the Marvel movies. Even though, like,
they were like, oh, wait, give us Star Wars and Marvel. We got it. Yeah. Lock.
Right.
Boy market.
Like, they had this weird obsession in the marketing room for some reason with the idea that boys wouldn't want to see musicals, which is crazy because every kid on the planet saw The Little Mermaid. Every child on the planet, every boy I knew in high school saw Tangled and loved it. And, like, it was cool to Tangled, like Tangled. Yeah. But, you know, they figured out later with Aladdin and Hercules and, to a lesser degree, like, Hunchback, I guess. But, like, that's a whole other thing. So I think this film is important because they need to make big swings. They, while this bombs, I think it encourages the people who work on it, who are going to keep working at that company and work on the Renaissance films later, to make something that's a little more bug nuts like Hercules, which is an insane movie if you just break down the bullet points of what that is. It is a Greek myth told through black gospel music in a Las Vegas style animation. Yeah. It is like, you don't get there without making
and
this.
And Danny DeVito.
And Danny DeVito. Yeah.
That is a really well put answer to that question. Yeah. And as Alex had sort of referenced earlier, adaptation is a conversation we've been having in our TikTok comments, vehemently debating, and this whole topic of like, does this piece of media deserve or need to be made? And we've been, you know, fighting in the comments with people about the Avatar live action. And here's where I'm sort of landing. It's like, adaptations, whether live action and animated, often will miss the mark of their source material. It's just a factor of adapting a movie or a story or property and condensing it into a more marketable, more, you know, consumer friendly form. But I think the attempt is a worthy one. It introduces more people to the Chronicles of Prydain, and, you know, the Black Cauldron box office critically didn't do great, but like, on the whole, it's an okay film. It's not a great, it's not their greatest animated film, but it's nice to look at. You know, it's just not one of their strongest entries ever. But like, I don't think that negates whether it should exist. And I think adaptation, you know, is sort of an art in itself, and not art as in like a medium, but like there's a touch, a knack to it, because when it's done really well, it is done really well. But often it sort of misses the mark.
I also do think that I see why Disney would want to make this. I think that there are like, there's a continuum here that places it in the canon with like Sleeping Beauty and The Sword in the Stone. I think there are like good reference points to other Disney films here. And it's interesting of them to be like, well, what if we made a princess movie that was about the prince instead? They hadn't done that yet. Still haven't really done that. And what if we try to make it with no music? Let's just push ourselves a little bit here.
No, I think that's a really good point. And I think that we talk about like need and deserve adaptation. This alone, I think, was probably like a lot of kids in the 80s and 90s, like first introduction to fantasy. like as a genre, totally. Probably. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I think that's important. It gets someone into Lord of the Rings and then D&D and then whatever down the road. And it probably has shaped a lot of people's taste in things. A good friend of the podcast, Tommy Pizzullo, he was one of the people that was like, oh, I loved Black Cauldron growing up. And just looking at what he's interested in now, I'm like, oh, I kind of see a through line here.
And Disney still sort of does this today. Recently, they had a live action series adapted a beloved young adult graphic novel, American Born Chinese, sort of morphed it into like this high fantasy thing, which isn't really what the graphic novel is. But I watched a couple episodes. It's not the best show. It's not the worst show. But I applaud the effort. Like, I want to watch more TV. Like, I don't know. I appreciate getting to see these things, see these things rendered with a big budget, whether the storytelling really hits the mark or not.
Anyways,
that's my piece on adaptations.
We have tortured the people listening for however long now. We got to talk about Gurgi. Everyone's favorite character.
Oh.
Munchies and Crunchies.
I've been
so mad. Oh, you got. I've been working on the voice all day and I don't have it.
It's not.
And so I'm embarrassed to come here and say I can't do it. Yours was pretty good. I heard it just now, Jazz. Right. It was way better than mine.
That was mine. You know what? It was a reckless attempt at just throwing it out there. Do the same, please. Go for it.
I got to do my cheeks in here and go like, Munchies and Crunchies. I don't have it at all, but I just love his voice. I want to do that. I want to be able to sit there and be like, do you have any Munchies and Crunchies? And people think it's cute and adorable.
Look, the single biggest missed opportunity of this film is the franchising of Gurgi. Not being
could have had a great Disney TV show in the 2000s.
Oh my god. Oh yeah, with the Timon and Pumbaa TV show. Like Gurgi as a stuffed plush, Gurgi as a pillow, Gurgi as a blanket, Gurgi as a Gurgi and the fairies could have had a whole thing like the Ewok adventures for Star Wars. It could have been like with the witches as like side characters every now and then. Love the witches, by the way. Love turning the guy into a frog. Sorry, Gurgi. Stay on Gurgi. I'm going a million places.
No, you're good. I love Gurgi too. Let's talk about these witches though, because they were an interesting character to me. Once again, it almost just felt like everything was like common knowledge in this world. Oh yeah, Black Cauldron. Oh yeah, witches. Oh yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like they just get there and the witches were like, oh yeah, we want that sort of power. Did they know what it was and what it does? We don't know, but they wanted
So the sword. The sword.
What does it do? Tell me.
I don't know. Actually, the sword was the moment watching this last night where I just recently started playing D&D. I got there so late. And as I'm watching this and I realize like, oh, the sword can do everything. Oh, the sword is electric.
Just what you need
the sword
strikes
where you need it to. The sword strikes for you when you don't need to. It's like super powerful. You can throw it. It could like boomerangs back to you, I guess. What doesn't it? I need a sheet that tells me what the sword doesn't do, because it does seem
all the stats.
Taren is like, I know he's like 13, so I'm cutting a lot of slack here because he's a child and he is a blank slate. He's totally tabula rasa. His only character trait is I want to be a warrior, and that's about it.
A great warrior.
Yeah. I'm gonna be a great warrior of Prydain.
I'm not a pig farmer. I'm a warrior.
Pig boy.
It's a hero's tale. And you know
it is
what
a hero's
I did
tale.
Appreciate? It's kind of a spin on a hero's tale.
Sure.
Because normally he'd get the sword and save the day with it. But the sword, the thing he wanted. Wow, I'm kind of piecing
he
this together
He gives it up
now.
For okay. friendship.
Yeah, he gives it up
okay,
for friendship.
Okay, you brought me
the power
around.
Of friendship.
You
okay, so the sword is the thing in most typical fantasy things. That would be like the end-all, be-all of the MacGuffins. And that was what Taren wanted. That was all he wanted. And at the end, he had to give up that sword for a good boy Gurgi's life.
I also have to imagine that that's like a book one, book two thing, right? Where like he gets the sword in book one, and then in book two, he's like, oh, it's time to give the sword up. And that's like an adaptation. Yep. I have no idea. I've not read the plot synopses for this. Three people are going to be very mad that I don't know that.
It's okay. It's
More
okay.
people
let
read the Chronicles
the
of Prydain. Let me know. Tell me what happens, please.
Interesting. I'm talking myself into some good points here because... It was because even, and I'm going to mispronounce her name, the Princess Eloane?
Elanwi.
Elanwi? So the princess was like, all you care about is that stupid sword. Also, I love this. They literally had a fight like 5 minutes into knowing each other. They had like the typical, like, they've been traveling for weeks on end fight. And I was like, wow, you guys literally just met.
Also, I love that Gergi always. I love that Gergi knows where they are, no matter where they are. He just disappears and shows up. Talk about the 5 minutes thing. Gergi shows up for 20 seconds, leaves, comes back for a moment, leaves, and comes back, and he's like, well, I guess it's time to kill myself for you guys. And everybody's like, no, Gergi. And, like, they've known him for a year or something. I love it. It's amazing. It's the
condensing.
It's the condensing. It's the streamlining of the story for sure. I don't ask questions when I'm a kid. You know, I watched Labyrinth like a month ago. A lot of similar things in this. They're actually kind of tonally similar in a lot of ways.
Just like, don't ask many questions. Maybe that's the lesson.
You just can't. I think, like, the dream...
Turn your brain
it's the
off.
Dream logic.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Evan and I are wannabe movie critics. We're also wannabe chefs.
We're all doing more cooking at home now. If you want to elevate your home cooking, you need nice tools to do it. Louis Kitchenware will get you there. They have beautiful stainless steel pans, nonstick bakeware, knives, all the stuff you need. Safe, high quality materials, constructed to last, made in the United States, founded in Detroit.
Moving into my condo, we got hand-me-downs. So this new Louis Kitchenware has been great, and we love the discount. We want to share that with our listeners.
You can use code 2DUDES, that's TWO DUDES, at louiskitchenware.com, and that'll give you 10% off anything on the site.
Check out our link in bio.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah.
The only thing that's critically missing from this movie that I think would actually make it, like, really good. We're all talking ourselves into liking it a lot and liking things about it and respecting things about it. But I think the thing that's missing is that the characters just don't have time to really talk to each other. There's not a lot of relationships forming. And I think actually if you just had a moment for there to be a few just lines of dialogue, a Hakuna Matata moment. I don't even need big exposition between them.
A walking montage.
Yes. I don't need Flute or Flims, the story of his wife and his daughter or whatever. But like, I'd like him to laugh at a joke once in a while. I'd like to know what he thinks is funny. I'd like, what's Taryn's whole bag with Dalben? What's that relationship like? What do you think of him? What do you think of the man that you live with?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Princess Flynn does have this funny bit where harp breaks a string when he lies. And I'm blanking on it, but I did laugh a lot, actually, when his harp was breaking these strings at these lies he was telling.
It was funny.
Yeah. I think, Chaz, you're sort of getting at, you know, even condensing the 30-some characters from the series of novels, it's still a lot of characters to juggle. They would benefit from more time to breathe within the story and more focused storytelling. And really, while I was watching it, it almost struck me as, like, I feel like this movie would have benefited from, like, less Disneyfication, where there are so many cute side characters, too many, like, side characters.
How dare you want to take out Gergi?
Take the fairies out.
There's also
the fairies. Yeah.
The fairies. When I like, looked down at my phone, looked back up, and there's, like, a little Santa Claus guy flying around. I was like, what is going on?
And he has directions, too. I'm actually peeved at what Chaz said. The whole first half of the movie, they are chasing the pig to find out where the Black Cauldron is, and the fairies are literally like, oh yeah, the witches have it, like, it's across the forest. Once again, nonsensical directions.
Yeah.
But like, what was the point of finding the pig?
It was fantastic. I mean, and then after, they're like, well, you guys go to the witches, we'll make sure the pig gets home. And we'd never see the pig again until the very end.
When
at home with Dalben and one of the fairies. You know, you fill in the gaps yourself, but like, did you speak to the pig? How did that communication work? Did you know the guy? Do you know the enchanter?
Where's your home?
The fairies, to me, this was the thing as a child that I think was where my brain switched off. Not necessarily because I got bored, but because I think it's just like, the world is magical. I don't need you to explain to me that there are fairies, but it's just a little, it always feels like a new tone is kicking down the door of the movie when they show up.
Yes.
And it's like everybody falls asleep and they wake up and we're in, yes, it's a hat on a hat. We're in fairy world and they're very cute. And that's their whole thing, is that they are adorable. They are so cute and they talk in baby voices. And like, they like go around and the king is basically the Sultan from Aladdin. And it's like, oh yes, I don't know. Where do you want to go? Go to Marva. And then that's it. And then there's it's just really, the fairies must be important in the book. They must have been so critical that they couldn't cut them. Or they thought, like, well, they have to have a reason to find the witches. When, like, actually, you could just go down the whirlpool and be in witchland, and I'm okay with that, too. Cut that 10 minutes. Give me more time with the witches in the book.
You could have
Yes, but we get a fun little slapstick Bugs Bunny moment of, like, Fluter Flim being turned into a frog and being stuffed in a witch's cleavage, which is 10 out of 10, by the way. Just
one of the animators had a type. 10 out of 10.
Oh, and she said,
Fluter Flim hit it? I think he did. When he
this
went
did
back.
Not age well, but she said, "Oh, I love forceful men." Hated that. I didn't like that one.
Oh yeah.
But he I like all the bargaining stuff.
He yeah. went back he went, when it was all said and done.
Unfortunately, I think he did. Because what did he? also at the end, they do this thing I love in fantasy movies, like all of them. This is not about the Black Cauldron. When at the end, someone's like, "Oh, we did it. Let's go home," and they all walk off in the same direction. Like, you all had pre-existing lives going on before this. We go into one person's home and we have a party. Or are you like, do you need to go there? Do you have a dad? Do you have a brother?
Someone's
gonna be
like, "Oh wait, I." Did you think I meant my home? Well, you can't live with me and the pig and Delber.
Where's Gurgi going?
We don't have room.
It's the classic. They say goodbye, but then like, oh, I'm actually going this way too.
Yeah. Oh no, we're same way.
Yeah.
I love that. The Gurgi of it all is really cute. We have to remember him. That's all I have to say.
And he kills himself or sacrifices himself, which is dark. But then, you know, in the spirit of Easter and around the time we're watching this movie, he's resurrected and he is risen.
You beat me to my goddamn joke, Evan. I'm so mad. I literally was about to say Gurgi is Jesus of this universe. I cannot believe you beat me there by 10 seconds.
I'm sorry.
This is how you know we've been friends for so many years. Jesus.
Yeah, that was a really good synapse for you both to have. Wait, so then
I can't believe you just said that. I'm stunned. Good joke. Great joke.
Jesus. If Gurgi's Jesus, who's Taryn?
Yep.
Who stabs Jesus? Who betrays Jesus?
Judas.
Yeah. Oh,
totally.
It's been a while since I've gone to church.
Speaking of stabbing, I was really interested that, like, the last conflict between Taryn and the Horned King, there's like they never make physical contact.
I noticed that too. Yeah, it's. I mean, but it's. There's only
no,
so much. They're like
either.
Already pushing the boundaries. I saw online there was deleted scenes of like people's flesh melting, which we kind of see in the movie too, but not to the degree of the deleted scenes. Look
have
up
you...
the deleted scenes if you're interested in this. They were gruesome for any animated movie.
I think I have these put in my note actually. To just like have some things. If I can screen share really quickly, I can probably share this. All right. I had it as the one that I found was, it's called Army of the Dead Restored Scene, 30 seconds by some uploader named Dennis.
Dennis. Number one result.
Found it.
Hold on. Give me one sec. I'm going to.
Love the internet.
Love the internet.
This is our daily reminder to go watch us on YouTube.
It's okay. We're zapping. Okay. That's in the movie. And then
I was going to say,
not.
We saw that.
It's
this is what
skin boiling. Like,
look at that. It literally deteriorates skin off bones in all three of our main characters. Whoa.
Children left the theater.
Yeah. Wimps. They said, "Mom, Dad, I need to get out of here. This is too much for me."
Kids in the 80s were soft, man. That was sweet.
Evan's like, we needed more of that in the movie.
I really
Meanwhile,
do think, I mean, maybe not to the degree of, you know, melting flesh, but I think if we just cut out some of the Disney's, you know, tendencies and what they're known for and, like, really made this lean into those fantasy elements, I think that would have been awesome.
I agree.
What were you going to say, Chaz?
I was going to say, I think it's interesting that, like, you know, just across the street, Don Bluth is making, like, really scary movies that kids love and watch. Secret of Nim. Land Before Time. These are hard movies, and his. I like his philosophy on this, and maybe this is why he wasn't good for Disney. I don't know. Not to say they never do dark, because like Great Mouse Detective right after this is kind of dark too. Hunchback is so dark. Bluth's philosophy on animated movies is kids can actually handle anything you throw at them as long as you give it a happy ending. You can do anything.
Oh, I like that.
Interesting.
I like that. It's not exactly the same, but I feel like I read something similar about some of the Charlie Brown like holiday specials. Maybe it was like a Christmas one, and like the soundtrack, Vince Guaraldi. I forget exactly how to say his last name, but the very jazzy album, and one of the reasons Charles Schulz didn't want to water that down at all because it's like very good jazz, is that he's like kids can appreciate and enjoy like more complex things than adults give him credit for. But so I love that philosophy from Don Bluth.
Mom, Dad, I've never heard jazz quite this soothing before. Have you? That's what I'm picturing children in the theater saying.
Father, this rhythm is rollicking.
Who is this?
Ba 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 ba. These suspended chords are tickling my ear. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Maybe the thing that freaked kids out in the theater, I not one to assume because we'll never see this cut. It is gone. It is long, long gone. That's the big lore around it. But maybe it's that like it was too quiet and kind of pastoral. That's the word I was looking for this movie. It's like you're passing through it. It's kind of picaresque, and then it's like boils and bleeding off the skin and flesh burning. It may have just been too much of a gap.
It starts off as like Snow White looking, feeling, and then by the end of it, you're like, whoa, this is a totally different movie than I was expecting. Yeah, there's a little bit of like a jump scare there almost.
The comparisons to Snow White is something that Disney sort of wanted for itself. They were, producers were saying this could be our next Snow White because they were coming off of a string of duds. So much so that through the changing of hands throughout, the decade or so that this was sort of in the works, towards the end, they brought in one of their more veteran character designers who had worked on Snow White and stuff. And so Alanwe looks similar to Aurora, Princess Aurora, I think, is maybe Sleeping Beauty. So some of the character designs are a little similar to that. And I was watching something today where people were like, I guess this producer was known for refining character designs as opposed to like making up fresh ones. So again, the history of this movie is fascinating, but what were you going to say, Chaz?
Well, I was going to say we really missed the opportunity to get a Black Cauldron 2 to VHS in the 90s where like Taron goes to college or something like that and he gets and Gergi's a professor or something. But also
Gergi's his roommate.
Gergi's his roommate. Fluter is his like cafeteria worker. And Alanwe is of course
I got a job in the cafeteria.
Gergi gets Taron into weed and Alanwe doesn't like that he's not motivated anymore.
Yes, and then they do like they do the X Games like from Extremely Goofy Movie, but it's like riding dragons and stuff.
Yeah.
I think too,
I'm here for that.
There's like a lineage from this movie too. Again, not to just talk about the story of it, but talking about what it could have been and the animators working on it, thinking like, this is going to be our Snow White. This is a big swing. You know what immediately comes out of this movie, too, is Musker and Clemens, because they get booted off this project and they get reassigned to Great Mouse Detective to finish that for the next year. And then that's like the final death knell. This is like the lowest low Disney ever has, but there's not another movie in between Mouse Detective and Little Mermaid. Nothing new gets approved for several years because they're like, what do we need to do? So Musker and Clemens go into Mouse Detective and come up with the idea that they will. This is the idea. You guys might know the story, but for the next 15 years, every time they get put on a movie, they'll say, "But you're gonna let us make that one, right?" And every single time,
which is Atlantis,
Treasure Planet, they wanted to make Treasure Island in space and steampunk Treasure Island in space, and every time, Michael Eisner is like, Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, next time. Absolutely. If you will just do Pocahontas, we'll give you your Treasure Planet movie. Like they're doing, and it's a massive bomb. It's a tremendous, tremendous
Treasure
bomb.
Planet didn't do well either, but I love
I did watch that in the last couple of years, and it does hold up. But it had massive technological breakthroughs in that movie, kind of similar to this, and huge passion project. The studio did not promote it, and just didn't go anywhere. And they didn't really, whatever. Fault of advertising. Chicken or the egg. Was the movie unwatchable, or was the movie just not advertised well? Did the studio bury it, or did the studio have to bury it? It's the same.
We've talked about these questions too.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes like a movie is buried because the studio knows they've got a flop on their hands, and it's like mean to say that because people pour their lives into these movies, so you don't want to say like, well, things are just not good. But no movie is the result of any one person's bad decisions. It's the result of bad management. It's the result of just like bad logistics and over here, and the work of a lot of people.
I blame the
three of them.
I'm joking.
Fuck them.
No, you have a much better way of putting it. I was totally joshing.
I blame Jeffrey
and you should.
Katz. Katzenberg.
Yeah.
I blame Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Himself.
What an insane, that is a cocaine move, by the way. That is a move that you do. I'll do it myself.
Yeah, I'll do it. Give it
to me. Like, well, move. That's not how we make animated movies, Jeff. So I'll do it. Give it to me.
Doesn't matter. We're going to do it. I'll do it.
I was going to say, with Treasure Planet and Michael Eisner continually promising them that for 15 years.
It's a long time.
Said.
It's 80. It's 88 until like 2000.
What a. Yeah, until, what yeah. Like a Logan Roy move, just like toying with their emotions, leading them the carrot and the stick, and oh yeah, you're my number one boy. Well, like I'll let you make a movie.
First, you have to go through classes, and then we transition you before we announce anything.
It's good. If you guys haven't covered that movie, you should do that on a future podcast.
Yeah, that's a good one, honestly. I haven't seen it in a long time, but that's another one that the DVD was spinning in my house constantly.
I saw that in theaters. I remember loving it. I don't think I've ever watched it again. And then, maybe there was like a Flash game on like Disney.com where you could surf. That I might have enjoyed.
Totally was. Good memory.
Just like, it's just worth thinking, and it is relevant to this because this changed directors so many times, it changed producers so many times, and the reason I'm even bringing Musker and Clemens into it is because they get booted from this project. Musker was the director on this. It would have been his directorial debut. Instead, Great Mouse Detective, whatever. They just the idea that they come up with for Treasure Planet while working on the development of Black Cauldron gets held over their head while they have to make, I say have to, but they have to make The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Hercules, before finally the studio's like, you can have your thing. And then nothing. That's
he
it.
Got a lot of good ones out of them.
They did. They got great movies. It's like, oh, well, we can't let you make that thing when you could make this. You could make Aladdin instead. What if we got Robin Williams to do references to every film character from the last 100 years?
They're like,
Robin
what if?
Robin Williams was on that? Holy
no, no, no.
Shit.
Well, he was in Aladdin. He's the genie.
Okay,
Aladdin.
Yeah. I thought
although, Robin Williams doing Gurgi would rock.
In Fern Gully, he does play the bat, which is like a similar character.
My name is Batty. The rhythm is a Batty.
Great film.
Another
great
classic
song.
Around here.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wow.
A lot of people saying Pig Boy.
For Terrence?
What do you mean? Yeah. A lot of people. The words Pig Boy are said a lot in this movie. That's all. That was the last thing.
Oh, in the movie. I thought you meant fans called Taron Pig Boy. I was like, why? They do actually. Yeah, they do say it a couple times in the movie.
That's all. Just the mantra of this movie I walked away with was just been calling people Pig Boy for the last 2 days.
Pig Boy. All right. So before we wrap up here, we're going to go through each of us. I want to give just like a summation, final thoughts. And we're going to give it a 1 out of 5-star rating on Letterboxd. And then me and Evan might go through a couple of Letterboxd ratings. And then we're going to wrap up here with some news. But do you have your closing thoughts ready, or do you you want me and Evan to go first?
You guys go first. I mean, I'm pulling up my Letterboxd review right now.
Yeah, no, you're good. Evan, you want to start us off, or you want me to go for it?
Yeah, I'll start us off. We've talked at length about how this movie is made by committee, sort of the drama behind the scenes. Critically, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score, if you hold Rotten Tomatoes in any sort of esteem, 54%. This movie gets badgered a lot. It gets bashed. It's not remembered super fondly, but I think people give it too much flack. I think it is a product of its time. I think it's a product of what was going on at the studio at the time. And I don't, comparatively, in their body of work, not that great. Against other American animation at the time, you could tell me any studio made this and I would believe it. And it's all right. It holds up for an 80s cartoon. The pace is a little slow, as are many movies, you know, back then. But within 90 minutes, it manages to move through a lot of story, 2 novels worth. And you don't feel that it's too short. It would benefit from a little more runtime. I don't know. I just appreciate this movie for what it is. I think it's high fantasy that is bogged down by some of the hallmarks of Disney as a studio. I would love to see more, you know, I would have loved to see Disney explore this darker fantasy animation. And I hope they adapt more stuff, you know, whether it's great, whether it's adapted to a T, I don't want to fault them for attempting it.
Well said. How many stars are you giving it, Evan?
After being so kind, I'll give it like a 2.5. a 2.5 out of 5 stars.
2.5 out of 5.
I think it has flaws. I might not revisit it anytime soon, but I'll remember it fondly.
Mm, well said, well said. My closing thoughts. The Black Cauldron, 1985. I think that I've gone through some phases with this. Recently come to watch it for the first time all the way through. And I think that something Chaz said has really stuck with me. I like that Disney took a swing here. It's not something that they normally do here. This does not feel like a Disney movie. It has Disney elements to it, but it does not feel like a Disney movie to me. And I appreciate when they take swings. I appreciate when they try something new, something not out of their wheelhouse. And another thing I appreciate, I always praise people in reality TV for this. Based on all the reviews, it seems like people either loved it or hated it. There's no in between here. Anyone who watches this film has a huge, yeah, except for Evan, everyone that has watched this film has like a strong opinion on it. And I can appreciate that. Anything that's polarizing is very interesting to me. Unfortunately, though, I am not in camp love it or hate it. I'm also giving it 2.5 stars. I feel like that's the appropriate amount of stars for
it's
this
film.
It's
not a malicious 2.5.
It's not a malicious 2.5.
We've reviewed stuff, and you know, 2.5 would be a mark against it. But
it's good. It's not a mark against it. Gergi got it. Gergi got us to where we needed to go.
Okay, so cards on the table. Right before we started giving reviews, I looked at my review and I gave it half a star from where I actually had it. And then I listened to both of you and I took it to back what I took it to my original rating. So I'm going to live in my truth and I'm going to stand in my truth.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that I gave this 2 stars.
Okay. All right.
2 stars with a heart, by the way. Those 2 stars are doing important. A lot of heavy lifting to the... Oh, hello. My cat is here.
It happens to the best of us. Hi, cat. Yeah.
It was so good. Those 2 stars are doing a lot of heavy lifting. They're not given in malice. I think that this movie has so much beauty and intention and creativity oozing out of it. And it's the reason I've remembered it for my entire life. It's the thing that stuck with me as a kid is that it didn't look like another Disney movie. It didn't really feel like another Disney movie. There was just something magnetic about it that I didn't find anywhere else. And, you know, the 3 stars that aren't there are what it could have been. What it could have been if it just wasn't so
well said.
Limited by the circumstances it was made in. And that's nobody's fault. I think it's fun to discover Dark Disney when you're a kid and feel better than everybody else for liking something obscure like this. Lord knows I did. It is so fun to grow up and learn the lore and think, well, it failed because people didn't get it or because Katzenberg meddled the edit. But you know, the truth is it's not amazing. And to Evan's point, it's better than a lot of American animation of its time period. Yeah. And it's not Disney's worst movie. By a long shot. And I just think it's a little narratively incoherent sometimes. I think it's a little dull, but I think the beauty of it, it's a strong 2 stars. I'm going to watch this again. If I have children, I'm going to show this to them. And I'm glad it exists. I'm really glad it exists. And I'm glad that we got to talk about it.
I think it needed to exist.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this movie to us because I don't know that we would have ever come to it. And it's so fascinating. I imagine in another 10 years, we'll be having the movie that almost killed Disney conversation about Wish.
Yeah. Give it another 10 years and we'll be like, Wish
Chris
almost
Pine,
took
man.
Disney out of business there. No, that's funny.
But
you've got to understand.
It is fascinating to
Lightyear,
think of a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Treasure Planet. It is fascinating to think of a time when, you know, Disney is not some sort of monolith that will exist in perpetuity and that is such a Goliath in entertainment across the world. And that they ever had a chance of failure. I don't know. There's a lot of, so much of this movie is very interesting. And this is the most kind, not great review we've ever given. And I think that just goes to, I think that's how people generally feel about this movie. It's like, it's not that it's a guilty pleasure, but they're like, yeah, they recognize its flaws and maybe it doesn't hold up but it's remembered fondly.
Chaz brought up a great point. This movie is memorable. Like he said, it stuck with him for all these years for a reason. It's very memorable. It sticks out. And I really think the only weakness of it is the narrative structure of it. I just at times, like Evan said, you look away for a second and you're in a totally new scene and you're like, wait, the pig's back. They were just looking for the pig. Like, so I think that give this movie 20 more minutes and we got a banger on our hands. And I don't say that often.
Or
I really
sequel?
Don't. Or a sequel?
Guys, I'm going to go one step further. I thought this, watching it, there was a moment I just thought, I need a song. I need a song right here.
Give me three songs.
Yeah, you can definitely skip and it's
some travel time with a catchy tune.
Yeah, yeah. With the love story, would have made more sense. The love story, man, when Gergi made them accidentally kiss each other, I was like, that little jokester Gergi, and he goes,
yes, give me three songs in this thing. You keep the same runtime. We get through five more scenes, and you know, I'm bumped up two stars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Three songs, but two of them have to be by Gergi, and I agree.
Yes, baby, kind of. No, I'm in it. Give him Danny DeVito's song from Hercules. Give him his little, like...
There you go.
There's precedent. They could do it. Well, this... I think Evan brought up a great point that I don't know we would have covered this without you, Chaz, and this is part of why we love people coming on and sort of, like, laying it out for us, like, hey, this was my pick, and this was why. This is why we do the podcast, not to be a broken record, but we want to bring appreciation to a medium that does not always get the recognition it does. And like Chess said, some of these things can stick with you for life. And it doesn't need to be like a message or whatever. It's just a visual. It's a sound. It's whatever. It's a character. It's a sword. It's a horned toad. Or horned king. I almost said horny king. I'm not going to lie.
There was a horny toad in there, or frog, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay. And a horny witch. So I think that this is just like the essence of the podcast. So we appreciate you bringing this with us here today, Chez. And, you know, before we, like, wrap up and sign off, is there anything you want to tell the audience? Anywhere they can follow you? Go Spotify to check out your album. Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm so happy to do this, guys. I loved it.
Yeah, well,
all socials at Chaz Cardigan. Yeah, of course. Thank you. At Chaz Cardigan. Chaz like an asshole. Cardigan like a sweater. That's everywhere. Super easy.
Thank
you.
But I'm asshole sweater. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Twitter, TikTok. I do the things. I teach a songwriting course. I make silly little TikToks about music, and I make music. So check him out.
Really,
and I love doing stuff like this.
Love it.
Thank you.
I'm going to embarrass him, but Evan used to make music a lot more frequent than he does now. And so we always love a self-made musician, honestly, like people who write their own stuff, that I'm all about it. So great. And so go follow Chaz. Go watch Black Cauldron. If you listened to all of this and didn't watch this, you're a weirdo. Go watch it. The movie's memorable. You're going to have a good time and you'll see what we're talking about. And you're going to fall in love with Gergi. But I think that...
Before we do the sign-off, I want to leave you two with one bit of trivia that I just saw scrolling through the Wikipedia. The character of Gergi was allegedly, the inspiration for Andy Serkis's portrayal of Gollum in Lord of the Rings. And that was my first thought when I saw Gergi. I was like,
Gergi
is Gollum?
Yeah, he was like, oh, it's like a Gollum
even with the
character.
Falling into the volcano at the end. But anyways,
wow.
This was a ton of fun.
Cool. This was a good time. Cool. Thank you again, Chaz. This was a lot of fun. This is why we do this here. Appreciate you coming on. Just to wrap up here, if you enjoyed this episode and you want more, please go check out our other episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. We have an extensive backlog of things I'm sure that you will enjoy. And make sure you follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. And wherever you're watching, please don't forget to like, rate, review. It does a lot for us on the podcast and helping new people find us, which we always appreciate. We just had a great month of March with Pixar March Madness, but man, it's good to be back. This was a lot of fun. I'm not going to lie. I'm like jazzed right now. Yeah. Mom, this is great jazz music. I'm listening. Just kidding. Thank you again, Chaz. And I guess wrap us up, Evan.
Yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. We will catch you next time.
Two Dudes Watch Cartoons.
Yes.